Hi everyone, Drew Perowit here today with another fantastic mini episode. These are where we take some of our top episodes and we break them down into bite-sized episodes, which make it easier for you to get all the nuggets, all the wisdom. Today we have Sean Stevenson and he's here to talk about sleep. Here's what Sean is going to go into on today's mini episode. He's going to talk about the most common misconceptions people have about sleep quality, the things that are messing up our sleep quality, things that sometimes I do, I try to be aware of it, and probably you do, but it's throwing your sleep quality off, the importance of light exposure first thing in the morning, and the supplements that can support a deeper, more restful night's sleep. If you know about sleep, but you need to dial it in a little bit, but you need a little bit of motivation, Sean is your guy, and I'm excited for you to listen to today's mini episode. Sean Stevenson, welcome back to the podcast. A pleasure to have you here in the new studio. We're talking all about sleep today and the things that consistently mess people's sleep up, that even though there's been so much content, books, podcasts on the topic of sleep, you look around, people are still suffering. Yeah. So what are a couple things right off the top that you think that people don't get when it comes to the quality of their sleep?
Yeah, that's a perfect question because there's a bigger picture. You know, we think it's these little things that we can micromanage, but if we step back and look at how all this stuff really works, we start to understand the circadian mechanism, right? We're lined up with the solar day, literally synced up with the entire solar system through our suprachiasmatic nucleus, right? So it's this little aspect that's in our hypothalamus. It's kind of like a circadian pacemaker, and it's determining when all of our biological methods and mechanisms are happening, right? So based on the time of day it is, when we're in sync with this 24-hour solar day, is determining what our digestion is doing, like how robust our digestion is. It tends to be stronger in the day than in the evening. It's determining when certain hormones are getting produced, when our testosterone is getting produced, when our HGH is getting produced, certain neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, all of this is synced up on this clock. Our blood pressure is going to change based on the time of day. The list goes on and on and on. There isn't a way to really escape this system, but we try. And that's kind of the issue today, is that we're kind of hiding out in a way because we can manufacture an artificial daytime at night today, you know, with the advent of lights and all the crazy things we could do with lights. But also we can hide out from the sun during the day, that natural light input, and throw off that synchronicity that way as well. And so one of the ways that we're really wrecking our sleep today is that artificial light in the evening. And there's been a lot that's come forward since my book came out back in 2016. That was the major published version of it.
Sleep Smarter.
Sleep Smarter. International bestseller.
Yeah, right, yeah.
21, I think it's 21 languages it's translated in. Each one a foreign distributor, foreign book deal. It's a, man, it really helped to change the game. And I'm grateful for that. So these conversations are being had now and very easy access, easy on-ramp. But I think people are still missing some of the science behind it because you said it. The CDC just did another report and they noted that our epidemics of sleep deprivation is now, it's somewhere in the ballpark of about 115 million Americans are regularly sleep deprived right now, right? So, and all of the ramifications that come from that, the metabolic ramifications, the immunosuppressive aspects of it, the list goes on and on. It's not good.
Hunger, cravings from not sleeping well. That's one of the things you talked about on the podcast the last time you came on to talk about sleep.
Yeah. So it's a master controller of so much of our reality. And so looking at what is one of the things that is really tearing up our sleep quality, it's having exposure to abnormal light in the evening. And specifically, researchers at Brigham and Women's Hospital at Harvard, they did a really fascinating study. And what they wanted to find out was, is reading on an iPad going to disrupt your sleep quality versus reading a regular book, right? Which they still exist. Drew has some here in the studio, by the way. It's an amazing new studio. And so what they did was they took test subjects and they had them to read a book for 4 hours on an iPad each evening for 5 evenings in a row. Then they had them do the same thing with a traditional paperback book or a hardcover book. They recorded all the data and it was nuts. The folks who, during the phase of the study when they were reading on an iPad, This was enough to dramatically suppress their melatonin secretion. They had far less time and efficiency in their REM sleep specifically. So that's rapid eye movement sleep. One of the big things that happens during that phase of sleep is something called memory consolidation, right? So even what people are listening to right now is getting converted into your short-term memory during sleep, right? And so that was getting suppressed. Also, they found that they had a harder time falling asleep. And as a result, they were waking up feeling more groggy and having less energy during the day the next day by being on that iPad at night versus the conventional book. So what's going on here? Well, this is one of these advents that is very new in our society. Doesn't mean that we can't utilize our technology to great benefit for ourselves, but we have to be aware that this is brand new. In the scale of human evolution, this is something that is so new, we have no idea of the long-term ramifications of this because we simply didn't have exposure to light of this magnitude in the evening. At most, we had fire, all right? And we're just talking literally just a few decades ago. That was it. And so today, we have these spectrums of light, and what tends to happen is blue light is getting the bad name, right? So blue light is the big villain. Well, some other research has come out recently, and there was even some data in Time Magazine about this, that is actually the yellow spectrum of light can be problematic. But that particular study was done on lab animals, so on mice, which they're nocturnal. So that hue that's more associated with a different type of daytime or maybe transitioning from dusk till dawn or whatever, we got to take some of this stuff with a grain of salt.
Sure.
Bottom line is artificial light of any type is going to throw off your circadian timing system, period. So that's one of the ways that we're really wrecking our sleep is our habitual patterns of in the evening, we're on. Some people are like, they're not just on one device, Drew. I don't know. You probably have done this before too. They're like having a device menage a trois. They've got the cell phone, they've got the TV, they got the laptop, right? So we got all these devices. And what's happening is we're really, again, throwing off this system. So understanding this is one of the things we're doing that's tearing up our sleep. What I want to provide also is what are some of the little hacks or quick fixes that we can do to help to remedy this situation? Sleeping smart is one thing, but oftentimes, what are the things we're doing to sleep dumb? Like, what are the things that we're doing that are really messing up our sleep quality? And that was the shower in the evening, like right before bed. So what's seen in the data is that there's a little bit of a rebound effect where having a hot shower, hot bath, if you have space allotted, your body temperature will, of course, increase, but it'll actually drop down lower than that set point and help to facilitate sleep. Now, the timing here could be an issue because what could be happening is it's driving the body temperature up and then getting right into bed and then maybe tossing and turning a little bit, not being able to like relax because that core body temperature has been elevated and the skin surface as well. Core body temperature isn't going to be affected that much from a hot bath or hot shower if you're not in there that long. And so one of the things that's seen in the data, researchers at the Pittsburgh University School of Medicine did some really fascinating research on insomniacs. So these are folks with clinically proven sleep disruptions, sleep abnormalities, really struggling. And they wanted to find out what would happen if they cooled them off before them, while they sleep and before they go to bed. And so what they did was they fitted them with these cooling caps and it was just running cool water over their head while they, laid down, went through their evening routine, laid down and went to sleep. Now, here's what happened. The insomniacs, and they had a healthy control. So this is a controlled clinical trial. The healthy controls took on average about 16 minutes to fall asleep after getting into bed. The insomniacs who struggled with sleep, suddenly they were falling asleep faster than the controls. They fell asleep on average 13 minutes after getting into bed, all right? And so we got a faster sleep onset, right? And within that, they found that they were now sleeping about 89% of the time that they were in bed, which is right on par with the healthy control group. So essentially their insomnia was gone. And this was true for 75% of the insomniacs in the clinical trial. Their sleep issues were resolved just by changing their temperature by fitting them with these cooling caps. There isn't a drug on the market that's remotely close, not even close, not even the same universe as just cooling these folks off, right? And if you think about it, again, it's just that the head area is one of those areas. Like there's something about the cool, right? As cool as the other side of the pillow. Like it just feels good.
Relaxing.
Yeah, it's relaxing. But what's happening, what's seen with insomniacs is that there's difficulty with thermoregulation. So their body being able to manage and control their body temperature in the evening. Now, guess where else in your body is controlling that internal thermostat? It's your hypothalamus, the same place as a suprachiasmatic nucleus that, again, is trying to sync you up with a 24-hour solar day, all right? It's literally determining your temperature. That system is getting disrupted from something in their lifestyle. Something is happening that's causing this outcome, right? So even with the cooling caps, we're still treating a symptom, but it's working, right? And so what are some of the other things that could be? It could be exercising too late in the evening. I've seen that clinically. I've seen people coming in, you know, and they're struggling with their sleep quality, sometimes for years, and they got a BJJ class that ends at like 9 p.m. and then they're trying to be in bed by 10, right? And they're just like, and they have their stories like, Sean, this is the only time I could train, this is the only time. But usually the story is not 100% true. There's usually, if you could take a step back and maybe even work with somebody who can start to look at your life through a different set of eyes, we could see like, oh, hey, if you do this, or if you do this, maybe you could move this here. Because what's happening when you're wrecking your sleep quality, everything else in life gets harder, right? So that could be one of those things is, you know, not getting conditions that are cool enough in the evening to facilitate sleep. And on average, depending on which expert you talk to, most experts agree it's around 68 degrees is ideal Fahrenheit in the bedroom. So, you know, today, especially most people listening to this have access to a thermostat, which is a great blessing and gift. But even in cultures that don't have thermostats and, you know, maybe they're again at the mercy, maybe very hot temperatures, even in the evening, across the board, no matter where you are on planet Earth, the temperature is going down in the evening.
Yeah.
If it's 120 during the day and maybe 105 during the night, it still went down. So your biology, your body is wanting to drop down with the environment, but we can superficially keep that body temperature up and we can get ourselves out of sync with the Earth's clock and throw off that ability for our temperature to downregulate, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Super makes sense.
But if we want to jump into the daytime now, because one of the big tenets is a great night of sleep starts the moment you wake up in the morning.
100%.
All right. So now we're swinging the pendulum back to the other side because we started this episode talking about the suprachiasmatic nucleus seated in the hypothalamus, the master gland of our brain, and how it's constantly trying to sync up our biological rhythms with the 24-hour solar clock. We mentioned how that clock is getting disrupted by our light exposure in the evening, but what about our lack of light exposure to start the day? One of the game changers for a lot of people is intentionally getting natural light exposure in the early part of the morning to help them sleep better in the evening. A study, this was published in Innovations in Clinical Neuroscience, and the researchers found that the test participants who got early morning sun exposure had a dramatic decrease in their cortisol levels at night. All right, so what they were doing in the morning with sun exposure was helping to kind of optimize their cortisol rhythm, because your cortisol rhythm should go up first thing in the morning. Your cortisol is kind of jumping up, spiking to start the day. That's normal. Just get up and at them. Get after it, go out, handle your business. Through evolution, this would be go and gather, go and hunt, go and, you know, community, connection, all the things. In the evening, it's going to gradually drop down. If cortisol is high in the evening, that's a problem, because in some ways, cortisol and melatonin are, it's kind of like the antithesis. It's kind of like if cortisol is pushing high, melatonin is going to have a tendency to get pushed down, right? So we do not want cortisol elevated in the evening. And so that was one aspect with the sun exposure. Here's another one. And more science is coming out, right? This is like a hot topic right now. And this is sun exposure on your skin and the serotonergic system. So you producing serotonin from exposure to sunlight.
Mm.
All right. And so some of the details that we have now is that exposure to sunlight during the day is triggering the production of serotonin. We're still, or there's some questions on how it's all happening still, but let me give you the point that we do understand. With it's one of those things that's helping to set that biological rhythm, because serotonin is a precursor to making melatonin. All right. And so it's like the opening act for your sleep in the evening. All right. So, and also that could be part of the reason it's pressing cortisol down in the evening. Serotonin is associated with being this kind of feel good neurotransmitter, right? But it's so much more than that. It's a regulator of our sleep, potentially in our biological rhythm overall. But melatonin especially is a huge controller of our biological rhythms. So with that said, we get this serotonin production with early morning sun exposure. We're still figuring out the details on this, right? We know that the early morning sun exposure is going to push down our cortisol in the evening, right? It's another check in the box of like improving our sleep quality. And to top it all off, it's one of those things where the timing of that sun exposure is going to make a world of difference too. So I want to make that clear. Any sun exposure, if you're not getting any, is going to be helpful. All right. But in particular, it's within the first 2 to 3 hours. And I really preface 2 hours of the sun coming up. All right. And so specifically it's the ambient sun exposure in the environment. You don't have to stare at the sun. We're not talking about that. But if you could get ambient light sun exposure in your environment, preferably, if you can get sunlight on your skin in the early part of the day, this is when the sun is less invasive for people that are concerned about, you know, sun damage and all that, which is another huge conversation where we're more afraid of the sun, which has a small amount of implications, which they're serious. The massive implications is not getting any interaction with the sun, which is literally enabling life on the planet. All right. Like that is the fear. Fear, the thing that has helped us to have, we wouldn't have oxygen without the sun. We wouldn't have, you know, plant matter. We wouldn't have life here, period. Like just come on. All right. So we have to be a little bit more aware and intentional about this, because again, we're very good at taking media and creating this fear mongering. Not to say you should, if you haven't been in the sun, to go out and spend 2 hours in the sun with, you know, super pale skin. I'm not saying that. Or to use protection. I'm saying that our associations are really skewed to where now we're in such fear of the sun and things have been promoted to keep us indoors. And we're missing out on a critical biological input. Sunlight, we know this now, is influencing directly thousands of our genes and influencing epigenetic programs, right? So determining which genes are getting expressed just by sun exposure, and the offshoot from that, vitamin D being another big important component. So to put all this together, what we want to do to leverage this is, if at all possible, I know that people have different conditions, but during the time of year that you can, whenever you can, get outside and get some early morning sun exposure. If your skin is darker, if you're looking for like production of vitamin D and all that stuff, you need more time in the sun. But get up, if you can get yourself just 10 minutes outside, and you can make it, you can stack it. Like you can go out, this can be your time. You go out and have your cup of coffee, go out and have your do your journaling, read a little bit, have your breakfast outside. You could exercise outside, which is going to help to support that cortisol rhythm as well, right? And that's another thing. I'm just going to throw this in here really quickly. Appalachian State University. I mentioned this years ago when we talked about this. Appalachian State University did a study to find out what's the best time to exercise to improve your sleep quality. And they had test subjects to exercise at 7 a.m. for one phase, 1 p.m. for another phase, and 7 p.m. in the evening for another phase. They found that the morning exercisers who were working out at 7 a.m. had more efficient sleep cycles. They tended to sleep longer. They had, and this was another really interesting thing, a greater drop in their blood pressure in the evening, right? So again, that's correlated with that drop in that sympathetic fight or flight right? That relaxation process, right? By exercising in the morning. Mm. Does this mean you can't exercise after work at 4 or 5? No, you could do that. Fine. But get some morning exercise in because it's going to help to improve your sleep quality.
Mm.
All right. So yeah, getting some natural sun exposure to start the day is one of the essential inputs that our genes expect from us to help to improve our sleep quality.
And you mentioned the right time of year for you, generally speaking, too, because sometimes we are here in just outside of Santa Monica, here in Los Angeles. It's a little overcast, but that's still beneficial. Do you want to say anything about that, like in terms of helping people understand just the, you know, even if you're on the East Coast, even if you're somewhere cloudy, it's still beneficial to be outside?
Yes, yes. One of the studies that I was just talking about not too long ago, researchers actually were looking at, and this was looking at cadavers and looking at the seasonal implications of serotonin in their system and finding that even in places that were more overcast, they still tended to have higher levels of serotonin or their analogs versus people who were not getting sun exposure at all, right? So getting sun exposure, so getting outside, even on an overcast day, the sun is still shining through. Many people know you can still get sunburned
mm-hmm.
when it's overcast. Matter of fact, it might even improve the likelihood that you're getting sunburned because of just how the sun is dancing in association with those clouds. But also, you know, if you're looking at, because all, this would get into the conversation of the different types, UVA, UVB, UVC. UVCs, like we've got this kind of shield around the earth in a sense in the ozone layer. So that's like galaxy level, like outside of the earth. So that's not really a concern. UVB, of all the rays that are reaching the surface of the earth, 95% of them are UVA. UVB is what triggers the production of vitamin D in our system. But so little of those rays are actually getting to earth, all right? This is why being adamant about getting sun exposure certain times a year, because that's even gonna change, right? We've even got this section of the United States that it's gonna change from the time of year when you're even getting vitamin D, producing UVB even reaching you, right? So there's this kind of belt around the country, right? And so if we're living in the northern latitudes, we're not gonna be producing or getting the types of rays that can help us to produce vitamin D, you know? So we gotta be mindful of that. This could be a place for supplementation potentially, but the human body's very good at storing up some vitamin D. So just getting the sunlight that you can. Now this conversation, I didn't know he was gonna get into this. With vitamin D, this is gonna be a different time of day than that morning sun exposure. So it's just like, I gotta get more sunlight. You know, it's like another natural input that we might not be acclimated to.
Mm.
So this is why I'm saying anytime you can get some natural sunlight, it's going to be better than nothing, right? And your benefits are going to be different depending on the time of day.
Give us a skinny again of the reminder about supplementation for improving our sleep. What works? And maybe even a couple things that might be overrated that you see out there.
Listen, you can get the best mattress. You can get the cooling pad, you can get, you know, your sun exposure in the morning, your exercise time, right? You can do all of these external things. If you're not bringing in the base nutrients, so I'm talking about the key nutrients that build your sleep-related hormones and neurotransmitters, it's all made from food. All the stuff happening within our bodies is literally made from food. And if you're
people
not
forget
bringing-
that. That's so simple, but people forget that.
Yes. If you're not bringing in the building blocks, like again, you're still going to struggle to have the magic happen. And so with that said, one of the biggest biochemical movers, prerequisites for building these sleep-related pathways, hormones, neurotransmitters, processes, is magnesium. It's crazy how many different impacts that magnesium has on our sleep quality and just so many other aspects of our lives. You know, it's now stated that around 600 biochemical processes are reliant upon magnesium. Let me give a big one. When I was in my university class and I was taught about ATP, right? The energy currency of the body that everybody talks about. It's on the tip of everybody's tongue. ATP is not biologically active until it's binded with magnesium. Mm. It's MGATP. These two things have to be together for it to be biologically active. I was not taught that. I paid for that education. They did not tell me that. How important this particular electrolyte is. It's in the category of electrolytes. So these are minerals that have an electric potential, right? So a conductive capacity. And this is how all of our cells are talking to each other, is this kind of electrical conduction. You know, our bodies are really just phenomenal. If you look at a heart monitor, that you're seeing the electrical output of your heart, all right? But we're so disconnected from these things. And then we hear the word electrolyte in our culture today, we think of Gatorade. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, there's this break in our awareness. So this was a placebo-controlled, double-blind clinical trial. And this was published in 2012. And it found that improving magnesium levels appears to, number one, improve sleep efficiency. So we go through our sleep cycles more efficiently. Improve melatonin function. So it's not just that you're making it, but is it actually doing the job that it needs to do? Reduced cortisol levels and reduced wake after sleep onset. Magnesium. So food first, dietary sources, pumpkin seeds, avocados, anything green is going to be a decent source of magnesium. So spinach and chard, but also what's in these categories of these superfoods, spirulina, right? So, but supplementation for a lot of folks is going to do them some good, but you just got to be mindful. There's so many different types of magnesium as well. This is where we get into such a complex thing that nobody has the right answer to right now, but it's good that we're experimenting. We're trying to figure it out because, again, in my nutritional science class that I paid for at my university, when the teacher was telling us, oh, you need to make sure that you get your essential vitamins and minerals. What the hell does that mean? There isn't just one vitamin C, bucko. I'm just saying bucko to him in my mind back when I was 17, 18 in college. But, you know, there's different types of vitamin C. There's different types. People know about B vitamins, for example. You know, B12, B6, there's different types of B vitamins. But even within B12, there's multiple forms of B12, all right?
I didn't know that.
There's multiple forms of vitamin D, right? There's multiple forms of magnesium, okay? There's magnesium sulfate. There's magnesium citrate. There's so many different types of magnesium. So now some supplement formulations are like giving you a spectrum of different types, right? So, you know, there might be like five or six different forms of magnesium in one supplement. Or a company's framing it like, you know, this is the one. This is the one that you need. Like it might be a magnesium citrate, right? Which it does help with that relaxation response. But I'm not advocating for this, by the way, because some people know about magnesium. They're like, that's not the one. But there are products that are just that, right? And I'm not going to, well, you say names, but it might be magnesium calm, right? Calm's in the name. That citrate is going to pull more water to your bowels. And so it's going to cause, if you have even a little bit more than your bowel tolerance, which could be that same amount that's recommended, 2 teaspoons, that serving. Maybe you give 2 heaping teaspoons on accident. And next thing you know, you're chitting all day, all right? You got to keep running off to the bathroom, right? And you might be losing electrolytes because now you have diarrhea, right? So you got to keep these things in context. So can I say the best supplement for magnesium? I can't say it. But shout out to the people that have dialed it in, or they're part of a good company that's figuring this stuff out. We still don't know. And here's the reason why. The type of magnesium that you might need is going to be different from you versus someone else as well. We got to keep that in mind. This is why food is so wonderful, because you're getting a spectrum of these different forms of magnesium. It's not just one form of magnesium in that chocolate. They're different forms. And it informs your cells in a different way than a synthetic version can. Right. And I'm also a big fan of topical magnesium too. Mm. I just put some on last night. So because through the skin, your skin absorbs magnesium pretty well, but especially if it's a great product that's done right. And also you can only absorb as much as your body needs, you know, it's not going to hit a bowel tolerance. You're not going to be rubbing it on your skin. You just have to run to the toilet.
Which, by the way, I think Natural Calm actually changed their source of magnesium from citrate to something else, probably because so many people were having that issue.
I haven't had it in years.
I haven't checked them out in years. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Not to try to drag them. I think it's a great product.
Yeah,
from back in
product.
The day when I used to have it. It was also very helpful, like if somebody was doing a cleanse.
Totally.
Get yourself some of that magnesium.
Somebody who's
calm.
A little constipated, get them some Calm.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't work anymore. I was going to recommend it to somebody and it didn't have citrate in it anymore. I was like, all right, got to find something else.
Oh, man. Hit that poop button. So yeah, magnesium is definitely, as far as the sleep building hormones, neurotransmitters, pathways, magnesium is needed to even kind of, even your muscle function, right? The relaxation response of your muscles, your body being able to relax. You can't really turn stuff off effectively without magnesium being present to run all these different processes. It's crazy how much it's responsible for. But guess what? It's very likely the number one mineral deficiency in our society today. Mm. I believe the latest statistics are somewhere around 56% of the American population is chronically deficient in magnesium.
Wow.
All right. So it's a big deficiency. Why is that? Well, number one, we're not eating real food anymore. And number two is magnesium is responsible for so much. It's getting zapped from our system. It's a stress modulating electrolyte. It's a stress modulating mineral. And we live in incredibly stressful, abnormal conditions today. So your body, it's just getting zapped from our system.
And probably too, you know, we have no affiliation with this company at all. We're just fans of Mountain Valley Water, and they've been around forever. They have natural magnesium contamination on there, which a lot of spring water does, right? If you look at the back of the bottle, it says naturally occurring at the source, there's a certain amount of magnesium. And human beings who had and typically would set up villages around the world around springs would get their water from there. And we probably got a lot of natural contamination of magnesium in a good way.
Concentration.
Yeah, just through there.
You said contamination.
Well, meaning in a good way, not in a bad way. I actually didn't mean contamination.
Oh,
you
nice,
got natural yeah. contamination. We often use contamination as a bad word.
I love it.
But as actually a positive thing. It has natural contamination. It has natural concentration.
Me and you should get contaminated right after this episode. You know what I mean? In a good way. I love it, man. Let's change these things around. But you mentioned it. Magnesium's in here on the label, magnesium, calcium, potassium. Those are three of the most important electrolytes.
Totally, which was naturally found in a lot of sources of spring water that's out there. So that probably plays into it. You know, we have all this water that is great, you know, has to be cleaned up and goes through the different systems and stuff, but doesn't have the same sources of minerals that we were used to. Nonetheless, we live in the modern world, and that's why we have podcasts like mine, like yours, to do the best that we can with the circumstances that we have. And when it comes to sleep is one of those things that if it's off, or if it was on for you for a time period, and then because of a stressful few years, maybe stressful stuff that's going on right now that you don't have control over directly, not that you can't influence things and be the best citizen you can be, you could have a messed up sleep protocol again. So if anything, today's episode is that reminder that it is so fundamental to being the best version of you that please, for not just you, but for the world that could benefit from you being your best, give it the attention that it deserves.